I mean, I don't know if it was intentional.
I had so many people, like wine people, text me.
Oh yeah, me
or
too.
DM me, be like, yeah. Couldn't quite make out. I knew you were drinking the one Rousseau. What was the other one? Or
yeah, someone called me last episode one. They said he's not gonna waste a drop of that wine. But I poured you some, and I said, oh, so I didn't know you wanted another glass. I poured you some, and we were talking in mid-conversation. I wiped the bottle and, like, licked my finger. They was like, oh, yeah, he's not wasting a drop of that.
Welcome back to Mind the Game with LeBron James and me, JJ Redick. This is episode 3. We're going to be talking a little bit about the evolution of spacing in the NBA during both LeBron's career and my career. We're also going to be talking about the evolution of certain positions, certain cuts. It's going to be a great episode. No, we have not upgraded to animation. No. We don't have a whiteboard yet. The whiteboard was sent to Los Angeles. I'm recording this in Brooklyn. So you're stuck with the paper, guys. A few key concepts I just want to review before we get to our conversation. Just as a review from episode 1, floppy is a catch and shoot play. It's very simple. On either side of the lane, there's two bigs. The point guard has the ball up top, and the two wing players are underneath the basket. The shooter can come out either side, make a play. In the context of this conversation, it's funny because LeBron James never runs floppy. So in this episode, we talk about corner splits. Think the Sacramento Kings with Chris Webber and Vlade Divac as the passers, Mike Bibby, Peja, Bobby Jackson, Doug Christie, those guys as the shooters and cutters. A more recent example was Rick Adelman when he was in Minnesota in the mid-2010s. Kevin Love, Kevin Martin, Ricky Rubio. That's what these guys ran a lot of. Corner splits is very simple. By the way, I apologize. A number of people have pointed out that the defensive players are supposed to be the X's and the offensive players are supposed to be the O's. Here's the thing. I've only had one coaching job in my life, and that is coaching 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. Now, when you coach 8, 9, and 10-year-olds, it can be very confusing to have X's and O's on the court. So I decided to draw X's because they all thought the O looked like a basketball, and that confused them. So for me, I draw my offensive players as X's. All right, corner split. There is a wing player in a corner. The ball handler brings it up a side. In this case, we're going to bring it up the left side, and the big, i.e. Vlade Divac, Kevin Love, Chris Webber, is somewhere in the vicinity of the elbow or high post area. You can occupy the weak side in a number of ways. Have a guy in the corner, have a guy high. You can have a guy in the corner or have a guy in the dunker spot. Because I don't love the dunker spot, we'll put the other guy in the high quadrant. Point guard brings it up. He would hit the big, Chris Webber, Vlade Divac, at the high post. He then goes into split action. As a reminder, split action is just when two offensive players go to screen for each other off the ball. And again, they can cut, they can curl, they can set a back screen or a rip screen. A rip screen is the same thing as a back screen. Oftentimes, again, the meaning is in the word. If I was to say, I'm going to go set a back screen for you, where would I screen your defender? I would screen his back. That's the same thing as a rip screen. So in this case, this is Peja. This is Mike Bibby. Mike Bibby can go set a down screen for Peja. Peja has a number of options here. He can curl to the basket. He can back cut. He can chase the basketball. He can come for a dribble handoff. In this case, let's say Mike Bibby sets a great screen. Peja just comes off. Vlade hits him. He hits a wide open jump. That's corner splits. All right, spread pick and roll. All that means is there's nobody in the dunker spot. There's nobody in the paint. All five players are spread across the perimeter. Depending on where the pick and roll is located, let's say it is up top, the ball handler here. You have a guy in each corner. This is a right-handed player, so we want to go to the single side. So we'll put this guy in the high quadrant. And then The screener would then come set a pick and roll. Again, everyone is spread out. Nobody is inside the paint. The opposite of this, of course, would be, let's say this guy, will eliminate him and put him in the dunker spot. That is no longer a spread pick and roll. That's just a pick and roll. Five out, delay. Again, the meaning is in the word five out. Five outside of the three-point line. Five out. This is, I think, one of the biggest revolutions, evolution in today's NBA. No longer see two people run to either block. As you did for a long time in the NBA, you still see it some in college. You certainly see it some in high school. Five out is how most NBA teams play. It's not necessarily a play as it is a set and a concept. So for the purposes of this, let's say it's off a miss. Everybody sort of run. You get two guys in the corner, one guy on the wing, ball handler bringing it up, and then the trail guy who got the rebound or who took it out is running down the center of the floor. Okay. Within that, you can get to a number of options. You can play a step up pick and roll here. You can run a stagger screen away, a stagger screen. Again, it's in the word, two players, a stagger, one screen, two screen. You can run away action. Away action, again, meaning is in the word. You go away from the basketball, you screen away like this, boom. That's DeAndre Jordan screening for me. That's Brooke Lopez screening for Kyle Korver. That's just away action. A lot of teams will hit the five man though at the top. And then they will get into split action. Delay is just another name for five out. Again, because I've got a white piece of paper, not a whiteboard, I can't go over every single option out of this, but this is the essential idea of five out or delay. Okay, the short roll, this is one of the most important concepts in today's NBA. It's a big part of this conversation as well. Let's just go back to that spread pick and roll, okay? So within that spread pick and roll, the five man is going to set a screen for the ball handler to get to his right hand. Okay. And let's say the help side is here, here, strong side, ball side is there. The big is up in the pick and roll and the guards and the defender of the point guard is right there. As this guy comes off, they put two on the ball. The short roll is essentially the area between, call it the restricted area and the three-point line. So at any point in time, if you get the ball to the five-man in this area, that forces a reaction from the defense. Now, this guy almost always will pull over as the low man. He's the lowest guy on the floor. He's the low man. That's his responsibility to protect the rim. This guy, as we discuss, sometimes will drop here, and he will essentially have responsibility on these two guys. Once the ball is in this area, this is the short roll area, anywhere, again, between restricted and the three-point line. The short roll area is where today's big man makes plays. A lot of guys are not shooting necessarily right here. They're not short rolling to shoot this shot. They are short rolling to either shoot a floater, a la Jokic, to make this cut, this pass to this cutter, or to spray out to this man for a three. That's the short roll. Another concept we talk about is the slot cut. Just to be clear here, the slot is another word for the high quadrant. It's another word for the wing. In a spread pick and roll, the slot is considered the guy on the wing. You have the corner, and the two people in pick and roll. So this would be the slot right here. The slot cut is simply a timed cut. Let's say the ball handler turns the corner, the big rolls, the defense reacts. It's a timed cut out of this slot to get the ball in this area, the paint, the rim, whatever, go dunk the basketball. Now, you can also, let's say you're posting the ball here, you can have a slot cut out of the post. A slot cut is just a cut from the slot area. Thank you guys again for watching, for listening. LeBron and I have really enjoyed recording these episodes, talking basketball, and I hope you guys have learned something and enjoyed it as well. Appreciate you. This is episode 3 of Mind the Game, Evolution.
Cheers.
Cheers, bro.
Very much enjoyed the first episode.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you a question, and we can edit this out if need be. This is just, I just want to get the conversation started this way.
Oh, that's great.
Because we were just talking about young guys. And I felt towards the end of my career, once I had figured the league out, and figured the league out, meaning like I had a job. You know what I mean? Not like I'm an all-star. But once I figured the league out, I felt like I could tell within 2 or 3 days of being around a young guy whether he was going to be all right in the league. Do you have that too? Mm-hmm. Do you sense that?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the markers for you where you say this guy's going to be good?
Coaches and veterans being able to get on them. And there's no snickering. There's no back talk. There's no, all of that. It's just they almost look like, just keep on coming with it because I want to see how much I can. Mm-hmm. I want to see how much. Just keep on because I'm absorbing everything. That's when you know, like, oh, he's going to be in this league for a long time.
One of the things that I always noticed was, and I wasn't perfect at this when I was like a rookie, especially. There's an element of fear, meaning. Once we step on the court, I'm not scared.
Right.
But there's an element of fear. Like, I need to be in the training room on time.
Yeah.
I need to do all the lifts that my strength coach is telling me to do. If my PD guy, player development guy, my PD guy's telling me to be on the court at 10 o'clock for an 11 o'clock practice, that guy's there at 9:55 ready
for
to
sure.
go. It's like the small stuff.
Yeah.
It's the small stuff.
It is the small stuff.
We are recording this on Thursday, opening day of the NCAA tournament, official opening day. I do not count the play-in.
Yeah, I don't count the play-in.
Either. Not because
I've been in the play-in a couple of times now as an NBA player, but I do not count the play-in.
I don't get, it's like, it's not official because you're still playing into the tournament.
Yeah.
And your high school coach just got a big win about an hour ago.
Yes, he did.
What did you learn from him?
Oh, my goodness. I think the number one thing that I learned from him right away is how to not only approach the game, but also how to think the game and also play at a level that was a lot harder and determined than the AAU tournaments that I was playing in beforehand. I got to Coach Danbrot my 9th grade year. So my first year of high school, first of all, back to the fear thing. When you go from middle school to high school, you're already terrified of what lies ahead. You don't know what to expect. You know, obviously, you know, in Ohio, you have 6th, 7th, and 8th in middle school. So you have that feeling coming out of elementary, going to the middle school from the 5th to 6th grade. You have that fear of older people in the schools and how is it going to affect you and things of that nature. And then you go to the high school and you see, you know, kids with beards and, you know, teachers, they just look so much more massive, you know, and I'm going to a coach that is a former college basketball coach. And you hear the stories. I mean, you know them firsthand probably, or maybe you don't because you're great. So you maybe had to have to do everything. But, you know, I heard, you know, the stories of like, you know, 5 a.m. wake ups to go run the mile or, you know,
this was your high school coach?
This is my high school coach. This is my high school coach. This is my high school coach. You hear the stories of like, you know, one mistake, everyone's going to run until the coach gets tired. And in my head, I'm like, how in the hell does a coach get tired if he's not running? So you're like terrified of all of this. You know, so the one thing back to your question that I learned from Coach D is that we're going to practice perfection every single day. Every single day, he always used to tell us, the game, the practices are going to be way freaking harder than the games. And you don't understand that every time the coach said, get on the line. That's a universal word right there, or a universal term right there, get on the line. You know that's the last thing you want to hear as a basketball player, to get on the line. But he was super strict. He was super demanding. He would get in your face, call you out of your name. There were kids whose parents used to come to practice that he would call them out of their names right in front of their parents. My sophomore year, my freshman year, we win the state championship. We go 27-0. I was MVP of the tournament. Obviously, Maverick was our captain my freshman year. My sophomore year, the first practice, I was came in as projected number one player in the state of Ohio. I was projected to be All-American as a sophomore, projected to be Mr. Basketball as a sophomore, which had never been done in Ohio high school history. And the first practice we had our sophomore year at the winning state championship, I did absolutely nothing wrong coming out of football. He kicked me out of practice. He kicked me out of practice. I had no idea why the fuck he kicked me out of practice. And I think he was just setting the tone for the season.
Yeah.
Like, wherever the fuck or wherever you think you are, I've heard all of this stuff about how great you are and things like that. Nope, I'm going to humble your ass right now. He kicked me out of practice. And the last thing he said to me when he kicked me out of practice, first day of practice, he said, best sophomore in the country, my ass.
I love that. Setting the tone right away.
Best sophomore in the country, my ass. And kicked me out of practice.
I actually think I had a healthy level of respect. So I played varsity as a freshman. But yeah. Actually, my school, middle school, was 6th through 9th grade.
Really?
So I didn't even go to high school yet.
So hold on, say that again?
So it was 6th through 9th grade. We didn't have space. They didn't have space in the high school.
Okay,
so the year
okay.
after I left, they built a second high school.
They split into two.
They moved down a division, that sort of thing, right?
Right.
So I'm coming off 8th grade. I start JV.
Mm-hmm.
I grew 7 inches that year.
Shit.
I learned how to shoot without my left thumb.
Yeah.
Started shooting a real jump shot. I go to AAU Nationals in Florida. I average like 35 a game. So I'm coming into freshman year with a decent level of confidence. And I knew my high school coach was tough because my JV coach was so tough.
Yeah.
But I was brash and cocky. You know the kid you saw at Duke early on? I was that kid.
Yeah.
And we were playing preseason. We were just like doing pickup. So we would do these stations where you had like 30 seconds to a minute on. So 30 seconds to a minute on wall sits.
Yep.
30 seconds to a minute on D slides with bands.
Yep.
30 seconds to a minute on jumping jacks with weight, like all this stuff. And we'd do that for like 30 to 45 minutes. And then we'd play pickup. So there was this senior named Kevin Conley. And he was good, but I also played his position. And he hadn't started the year before, so he was like very much wanted the starting position. Yeah. So we were playing pickup, and truthfully, Kevin, I was busting your ass. I was busting his ass. And he said, and I started yapping off.
Yeah.
And he said to me, he said, I'm going to tell you right now, shut the fuck up. And he gave me the look. Mind you, I'm my size, but 155 pounds. So I was like, oh, he's going to kick my ass. And I didn't say anything. We checked the ball up. As soon as somebody passed it, he just popped me in the face, right? My jaw still pops this day. And pretty much from that day on, I had a healthy level of fear for high school. A healthy level of fear. Do you think there's anything for you? I know for me, like, I played for Coach K.
Yeah, yeah.
I played for a great high school coach. I played for Boo Williams and AAU. We talked about our coaching and how important that was to us last time. Do you think for you there was anything transferable from what you learned in high school to what you had to do in the NBA, especially early on?
From a coach's perspective
on the court? On the court, being a player on the court.
No.
Totally different game?
It was a totally different game, but the nuance and the fundamentals and, you know, the things that was being taught to me as an 18-year-old, I kind of had already knew a lot of that shit. I mean, it's It's weird to kind of say, because you feel like when you get to the NBA, you're going to learn so much more, which I eventually did, you know, and I think that just came with, like we always talk about, you know, experience. Yeah. The best teacher in life is experience, you know, but when I got to the NBA, the biggest adjustment I had was literally just going from like, oh shit, I don't have to go to class every day, you know? I'm going from 27 game season to now 82. So like, oh shit, like after 27 games in the NBA, you know, around about 32 games, I'm like, I'm exhausted, you know? So now like, what can I do to get the energy back going? But as far as when I stepped out on the floor, there wasn't too much of an adjustment. I felt like I was physical enough. I felt like I had the size, I had the speed, obviously, I had the athleticism, obviously. You know, you have the, you know, some of the vet tricks and things of that nature, how to get away with certain things that I had to kind of learn and whatever the case may be. But, and then I was thrown around with many positions my rookie year too. Like at one point I was a two guard at one point, you know, my first game in Sacramento, I was coming off floppies.
Oh, we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah. You know,
we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah. And then next, we make a change or whatever. Now I'm the point guard. It's like, you know, which is one natural position for me, but also not a natural position. Like I love to pass the ball. I love to bring the ball up, but I've never really started at the point guard position. So it's still very different. But I was able to just kind of seamlessly kind of just move right on in.
Figure it out on the fly a little bit.
Yeah, figure it out on the fly.
With the tournament going on right now, have you, I rewatched episode one, and you talking about not going up to Ohio State for parties, down to Ohio State for parties. I was like, all right, I wonder if he ever thought to himself this time of year, man, I wonder what it's like to play in March Madness.
Absolutely.
You have.
Yeah, 21 years later.
You're still thinking about it every year.
Yeah. This is the only time, though.
I was thinking about all the stuff you've experienced in basketball, but you haven't experienced that.
This is the only time. March Madness right now is the only time I think about playing college basketball for 21 straight years. I don't watch much college basketball. This year I watched a ton of it, obviously, because Bronny's in college, you know, so I was there watching the game. But it's just, it doesn't translate for me. It frustrates me. My high blood pressure picks up. I'm a black man and high blood pressure is just not good for us. So I try to stay away from it, but I love basketball. So I find myself watching it anyways. But I literally, before we came in here, like you said, Duquesne won their game. Big shout out to the Dukes, Coach D, our best friend, Drew Joyce. Right after the game, I was watching Illinois versus Morehead State scouting because that's who they play next.
Mm. And you're going to give them notes?
Already did. I already sent notes already. I got to watch like a quarter, third, three-fourths of the game before we started. And I've already sent notes. I'm a junkie, man.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. Well aware. I want to talk about spacing today. You mentioned coming off floppy in that Sacramento game, your very first game.
Yeah.
Do you specifically remember your first two baskets of your career?
I remember my first one.
Okay.
My first basket was coming off a floppy action, and I faded to the corner by our bench and received the ball over the top and hit a 17, 18 footer.
First of all, it's hilarious that you were running floppy.
It's hilarious.
On that one, you came off and took the one dribble baseline, and C. Booze, after he set the screen, kind of backed up into the pocket around the elbow.
Yep.
So there was like a little space. On the second one, you came off the other side and curled, and Ricky Davis hit you at the elbow. And I had this screenshot on my phone, and it's Z on the left block, C. Booze on the right block, Darius Miles spotting up from about 17 feet at the right wingish, but not really space.
Not really space.
And then Ricky Davis is just standing there at the top of the key. It's like literally
eight or nine people.
All just right there.
Yeah, right there.
And then you drove back and hit a little fall away going left.
Yeah.
When did you start to feel like the spacing was changing? in the NBA?
You know, that's a good question. I'm trying to think. I think the spacing started to change in the NBA. I think Stan Van Gundy had a lot to do with it. You know, now that I think about it, I'm thinking because I was in the East, and obviously, you know, they had a lot of spacing, you know, in Sacramento in the early 2000s, but it wasn't a lot of spacing. Maybe they just had some shooting. Obviously, Mike Bibb could shoot the ball. You know, Peja was shooting the ball.
They ran corner splits.
Yeah, they run corner splits. They, you know, you know, Vlade, you know, could play the elbow, could play the corner, could hit the, you know, the three at times. You know, see Webb from time to time with space a little bit, but he was more in the post. You know, Bobby Jackson would fly off, obviously, for shots. But, you know, I believe Stan with Dwight, you know, kind of in that 07, 08, 09 kind of range, they started to change it a lot. You know, I hadn't seen that much space because I played against the Detroit Pistons, and obviously you have Rip on his floppy down action, you know, flying off the floppy down or the two chests or whatever the case may be. But with Stan, I think he saw what he had in Dwight, and he started to build that team around him to, like, I want nothing but space, you know. And we saw that. We saw it when Rashard Lewis got on that team. We saw it when Hedo Turkoglu got there, you know, and then added Jameer, you know, and added just a bunch of space, you as well. Like,
took a while.
Yeah, you know, it took a while to use your superpowers. I tell you that. It took a while for you to use your superpowers, or them to use your superpowers for the better of the team. But even where Ray Allen was on Boston, you know, in 08, it still wasn't a lot of space out there. KG was posting up.
Rondo was not a shooter.
Tony Allen wasn't a shooter.
Right.
You know, PP was
playing
was a three-level scorer.
But they were playing two bigs a lot.
You know, if it was KG and Perk or KG and Big Baby or whatever the case may be. You know, Detroit was still playing two bigs even when being with the Chicago. You know, they brought in Chris Webber. You know, so they were playing two bigs as well. You know, I feel like, you know, Miami was still playing two bigs. They was playing Shaq when he was there, along with Udonis and Zoe when Zoe came back. I feel like the Orlando, man. Orlando kind of was the first. I want to say the first because they're obviously
the precursor was definitely, in my opinion, the Suns, right? Yeah. The Suns were the first with D'Antoni and Steve Nash, Marion at the four, Amari at the five.
But Marion wasn't a spacer either, but he was so athletic and had so much speed that he created space.
Yes.
You know,
we're going to get to this.
Their pace.
We're going to get to this in a second.
Yeah.
But it's funny because with the Magic, I'm not sure that was the intention. Now, ultimately may have played out that way.
Right, right, right.
But Tony Batiste hurt his shoulder guarding Dwight in preseason.
Mm.
And we tried Turk at the four in the preseason games.
Right.
And he refused. He's like, fuck this, I'm not guarding. Yeah. You know, I'm not guarding Rasheed Wallace.
Fuck this. Yeah, yeah.
So Rashard, as a good teammate and a true professional, unlike Turk, he's like, fuck it, I'll do it, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it created an advantage. And we ended up playing you guys in 09, the Eastern Conference Finals. And by the way, I played 9 minutes. 9 minutes that series. Second quarter of game two. But I got to watch some awesome basketball. And it's weird. I've rewatched some of that series. And it is so apparent that no matter what you did, no matter what y'all did, we just had an advantage.
Yeah. The whole season, we geared our team up to play Boston. Everything was geared to play Boston. Everything. We never practiced anything besides two bigs, a point guard, a small forward, and a shooting guard. And then, fuck, you guys win. And it's like, we've geared up all, you know, we had Big Z, Anderson Varejao, myself, Delonte, and Mo Williams. I mean, you guys are out there with Dwight, Rashard, Hedo, Jameer,
Beatrice, Courtney Lee.
You guys are out there with, like, what the league is to now.
Yeah.
The league to now is, like, long wings, shooters, and a guy that can screen, roll, lob. And then you add on even more with Dwight because he could occasionally post up a small.
I think, too, you know what, looking back on that team that I think was so important, because I talk about this all the time now, Jameer Nelson could shoot threes out of pick and roll.
Yeah.
It's an important thing.
It is a very important thing for many reasons.
First of all, it unlocks everyone's offensive game. If you can shoot threes off the dribble, it unlocks your game, right?
Absolutely.
But also just for the offense. Now, all of a sudden, you're forced to make a decision in a Jameer Nelson, Dwight Howard pick and roll. Hedo Turkoglu.
Yeah.
If you decide to go under him because you don't want him getting to his right hand, you have to make a decision now.
He's going to shoot a three. He's
going to
shoot it.
So we would run that angle pick and roll.
Yep.
We'd have a shooter in the left corner.
Yep.
Turk going to his right hand.
Yep.
Dwight rolling and two shooters.
And two shooters. Where's the help coming from? And you can't switch it because Dwight's going to bury you, hit you with 19 elbows. And he doesn't care about getting one or two fouls off the elbows, but he's going to dunk you in the rim. This is like super duper man Dwight at the time.
I rewatched game five the other day. And
I've never watched a series, by the way.
You haven't. No. I'm very curious to get your thoughts and what you remember about that series specifically. Because this is what I remember. And I was like, I'm going to go watch.
What was the series?
4-2.
4-2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
4-2. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't talk to the media after game six. I was pissed. I was pissed. I took a shower and got shown on the bus.
I remember that now.
Yeah, I was pissed.
Game five, I was watching the fourth quarter. Literally your offense. You didn't match up Hunt. For the first part of the fourth quarter, you had two bigs in the dunker spot, either dunker spot. You had Mo or Delonte. At one point, it was Wally Szczerbiak spotting up.
Yeah.
And you would post up Mikal Petras at like 19 feet and then try to go one-on-one. It was really interesting to watch that versus spread pick and roll with shooting and spacing.
Yeah,
it was like, really interesting. Like, and by the way,
how the fuck is he functioning with this?
By the way, this is not like a knock on Mike Brown at all.
Right.
Like, I'm not saying that. It was just what we were doing was so different at the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like the next year everybody's like, oh, we're going to try to emulate what Orlando did.
Right.
2011, I'll never forget this game. We played against the Minnesota Timberwolves in our new arena. And that's when we had Ryan Anderson and Rashard. And we would get to our spread pick and roll. And it didn't matter where Ryan or Rashard was. They would tag Dwight with Kevin Love, the four man.
No matter where he was.
No matter where he was. So if he's the high guy.
He's taking him all the way to the rim.
On the double side, they're tagging him at the rim. And Ryan and Rashard are just sitting there teeing him up. It's bizarre.
It's super bizarre.
I'm not going to gas you up. I'm going to say one thing, though, real quick. You averaged 38-8-8 in that series with that offense and that spacing.
With no space.
With no
space.
It was wild.
It is wild. To think back on, like I said, I have not watched that series since it happened. And to think that I damn near averaged 48-8 in a series with no space is, and I'm obviously, if I caught a good heater, I could make a couple of threes in a row, whatever the case may be.
But that wasn't my thing.
That wasn't my thing. I lived in the paint or in the post.
You didn't have your signature move then?
I didn't have my signature move then. No. I was not a disciplined jump shooter at that point in time.
Interesting. What do you mean by that?
I would shoot fadeaways for no reason. I would be off balance for no reason. I would make shots more difficult for no reason. And I envied guys that can go straight up and down or could like shoot the same shot every time. And it was just discipline. I was so athletic that I could will myself. Sometimes there's like old clips of me that I watch or come across my timeline on social.
Yeah. Hold on. Bro, it's okay.
I see the clip sometimes.
No.
I don't just go online and look up LeBron James highlights.
We all watch our own highlights on YouTube. LeBron.
I'm telling you.
You've never gone on YouTube?
Yes, I have. Of course I have. I say from time to time they come through. Of course I have. Especially, by the way, the number one reason you do that is when you hit like a little slump or whatever.
You're
where's my game at?
Where's my game at?
Oh, YouTube is the perfect place to find your game.
March 2018 at Charlotte. 27 points. Type it in. Let me see my game.
Absolutely. We've all done it. Yeah, we've all been there for sure.
We've all done it. When you guys got together in Miami,
yeah,
the conversations with Chris about his role, mm-hmm. but also the decision to sort of move him to the five, which, by the way, was not right away.
No, it wasn't.
Like, was there pushback on that at the time? Do you remember, like, those conversations? Because, you know, I know UD was there. Joel Anthony was there.
Yep. Yeah, my first year, Big Z was there and
Big
Eric
Z
Dampier.
And Eric Dampier.
I'm going to tell you when it all changed. Obviously, my first year there, you know, played great basketball, got all the way to the finals, losing the finals. I played like shit. Spo is the reason why we were a better team and our team was more assembled properly. That summer, he went to Oregon and hung out with Chip Kelly.
Oh, interesting.
He when we lost to Dallas, he went to Oregon and hung out with Chip Kelly and learned to spread offense and tried to figure out if he could translate that to basketball. And don't know the super conversations that him and Chip had, but I know when he came back to us, he knew in order for us to reach our potential, one, I had to be fucking 10 times better than I was in that previous June finals. But Chris Bosh had to go to the five. And CB being who he is, there was no pushback. There was no pushback. He knew in order for us to reach our potential that CB would have to go to the five. And we had to spread. He had to start working on his corner three faithfully every day after practice. Corner three. Every day at the practice. We're going to post you up. We're going to get you your elbow catches. The offense is going to run through you at times. But in order to bring, you know, the Tyson Chandlers out of the paint, in order to bring the Roy Hibberts out of the paint, in order to bring Tim Duncan out of the paint at times, in order to bring Kevin Garnett out of the paint, you got to hit these corner threes. You got to at least be a threat. And Spo knew it. He had that vision. He went and learned. He said the way I coached in that finals versus Dallas, unacceptable. I told myself the way I played, unacceptable. And he came back with vengeance, and I was locked the fuck in from start to finish. But it was Spo.
I got a question about the Bosh spacing, but because you just said that, was that the low point for you in your career?
Oh, for sure.
2011.
The lowest.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lowest.
Yeah.
The lowest.
What is it, the Bosh spacing? What did that sort of unlock? I'm curious. Like, what were the actions? What was the two-man game?
Yeah.
What were the reads?
The cutting.
Slot cut?
The slot cuts. It unlocked the slot cuts. It unlocked exactly what myself and D-Wade thrive on. Dribble penetration, slot cutting. Pick and roll happens. You tag, slot cutting. It unlocked all that. And we all know how great D-Wade is on the baseline. It's hard to cut behind the defense when X5 is standing there the whole time because, you know, the offensive five is there. You know, so, you know, you hit me on the pocket pass now, you know, I get the pocket pass from Chalmers or from Norris Cole, you know, and now Bosh is in a strong corner. Are you going to leave him or not? If you do, he's going to tag you. And if not, when I roll, now you got X3 or X2 tagging on me on the roll. And 9 times out of 10, that guy that's playing the elbow that's supposed to X to the corner, he's Xing out to the three-point line, and D-Wade's slashing right behind him. It unlocked so much for our offense. And it gave myself and D-Wade in transition, we had this thing called the Mack truck lane. So from the block to the block. So say, for instance, we sitting on the free throw line.
Yeah.
You got one block on one side, one block on the other side.
I can picture a basketball court, yeah.
We do it for the viewers. I'm not questioning JJ's expertise.
No, I know what you're saying.
First day of training camp, we had that whole thing taped off. The bigs were not allowed to run in between the Mack truck lane. From the first day of training camp all the way to game one. Prohibited. You're not allowed to, you got to, and if I'm bringing the ball up and the big is behind me, he can't cross the court. He has to run wide behind. This is all. Spo is like, he's that damn good.
Some Twitter sleuth will correct me on this, and I will accept it if I'm wrong. But in my mind, when I think of five out or delay, I think of the Miami Heat with Chris Bosh. As maybe it wasn't the originator, but the first time I'm like, oh, this is different and this is happening, was the Miami Heat with Chris Bosh.
Yeah.
And sure. It changed everything.
It changed everything. Changed the whole team. Then we added Ray.
Added Shane.
Added Mike Miller. We added the spacing. And CB could pass. He could rebound and push. There wasn't many fives at that time that was rebounding and pushing the break. You see it all the time now.
Right. You see Bam. Bam does it.
Bam does it all the time.
Yoke, of course.
Yeah, the MVP of the league. Yoke does it. It's like CB was pushing the break. Okay, if he ain't have nothing early in trans, boom, right to a DHO. Second side, swing. Like, he was just smart. But, I mean, obviously, when you move from one position where you're so dominant, you think of CB in Toronto where he mainly played the four, almost probably 95% of the time played the four and averaged 25 and 10 or 12.
The ball exclusively went through him in the mid-post.
Every single time.
On either block, really.
Yeah.
But it's remarkable that he changed that.
Yeah, he changed that.
The slot cut. Can you explain the timing, the play, how it works?
We actually...
It's now part of every team's vernacular and every team runs it now. It becomes programmed into everybody's reads in pick and roll.
Yeah, and it used to not be a live cut. I go back and watch college basketball and there's so many fluff cuts or cuts that don't do anything. It's like, why are you making a cut towards the basket and you're not even looking at the damn ball? You know, so the slot cut, I started to make the slot cut when Mike Brown took over for us in Cleveland. We actually used to have a play. When we got Mo Williams was one fast, quick motherfucker off pick and rolls and another guy that could shoot the three off the pick and roll. We would run angle. Mo Williams would have the ball left slot. We would have a shooter in a strong corner going same side as him. And either Vergeau or Z comes at the step up. You know what? Take that back. I'm sorry. No strong side shooter. Strong side shooter in the weak corner. Only Mo's job was to race the big. Race the big, get around the big, get around to the baseline. And at the same time, as soon as I would see Mo race the big to the baseline, Anderson, Vergeau, or Z would come set a rip screen for me, blind. The guy that's guarding me, and the corner man couldn't leave because it was a corner shooter, and I was slot cut at the same time. It's easy clip. We could find that clip easy. And Mo would drop it to me. And I would either dunk it home or finish it or whatever the case may be. We actually put that in one of our ATOs. And then when I got to Miami, I started to just see a lot of guys peeking. A lot of guys with D-Wade had a ball. Obviously, he attracted a lot of eyes. He's a driver, whatever the case may be. Instead of me standing out and shooting threes, which at times I wasn't always comfortable with shooting threes, I would see guys peeking. And as soon as I would see my guy turn his head, I would slot cut.
This is part of the reason it's really hard to guard spread pick and roll.
Yep.
And we'll put the clips up as well. But if The X's here are the offensive player, right?
Correct.
And you're running this angle pick and roll.
Correct.
And let's say the big is in a drop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is the guard. This is the guard, right?
Yep.
So if this guard turns the corner here,
yep,
right, on the big, Damian Lillard does this better than anybody, especially,
yep, especially
on the left.
Going
side,
left.
Yep. Especially going left. Especially going left, right? This guy has to make some sort of decision.
Yep, he's coming to 2-9.
This guy has to get into an X position. And who the fuck is guarding this guy?
Nobody.
Nobody, right?
Nobody.
So
that's the position I'm in a lot.
The slot cut.
The slot, yeah.
The other one is this, which Golden State, when I think of this cut, I think of Golden State, which is essentially same formation. Here's the defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you put two on the ball on Steph Curry and Draymond Green.
Which is the worst thing you can do.
Right, right. This guy's going to have to be the low man. So Draymond rolls, Steph hits him right here. This guy drops. What's going to happen right here, LeBron? As Draymond Green takes a dribble into the paint.
It's a lob.
It's a lob every single time.
Every single time. And
it's a lob every single time.
You
literally can't put two on the ball.
You can't. See, everyone thinks that putting two on the ball takes Steph out of the play. The problem that you don't understand is that you're now unlocking Draymond's superpower offensively.
Yeah.
Draymond's superpower offensively is the 4-on-3 game. You put two on the ball. Now Draymond is 4-on-3, and I'm going to have Iguodala in the pass. Now Wiggs and Kumonga, they're going to be in that opposite corner. And if you help up too early, there's going to be a lob, and that is demoralizing. And the number one thing, it's so much momentum, a half-court lob. So much momentum.
When we used to that's the worst court I've ever seen, but I'm going to do the same formation real quick, same set. So, like, when we used to teach or learn,
yep,
how to guard, spread, pick, and roll,
mm-hmm,
right, you would do this drill. I'm sure you did this drill. So, you know, here's the defense,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Here's the defense. And as this guy comes off,
yep,
the low man pulls, yep, over. Here's the basket.
Yep.
The low man pulls over. This guy drops.
Drops. Yep.
And the drill was always this. This guy,
yep,
the ball handler,
yep,
would skip it.
Skip it corner.
And
X.
You would literally
X
make
out
an X.
And get back.
There's,
yep,
an X.
Yep.
But nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
They hit the short roll.
Yeah.
And the short rollers now in today's NBA. Like, if you're a big coming into the NBA right now, what's your player development program look like? It's literally playing out of the short roll.
Yeah, playing out of the short roll.
Especially if you're Jared Allen,
yeah,
for the last 5 years, what is he doing?
Short roll.
Short roll.
Yeah, especially with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. They're going to attract so much, you have to be able to play out of the short roll. And when you play out of the short roll, it's not for you to score. Yes, you have the ability to score, but you have to read the game. You have to read the game.
Think about Chris Bosh, and it makes me think of Chet Holmgren a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You guys probably run different stuff, but in a way, what makes OKC so good is their ability to drive the basketball,
yep,
and then kick and then drive the basketball and then kick. Yep. And they did this last year.
Yep.
This is how they played last year,
yep,
when they were 42-40.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden Chet comes in.
Yep.
And it unlocks everything.
Yep.
In the same way, I'm not comparing Chet to Chris Bosh as, yep, like...
But to unlock the most...
But to unlock how you maximize the offense,
yeah,
you need Chet on that team.
For sure. No question about it. He changed the dynamic of everything. You know, they have a one set that they run off of all free throws where Chet takes the ball out. They send two guys to the other end. Both of them sit in the corner. And Chet takes the ball out. And now Shea has it on the right wing or the left wing or whatever the case may be. And normally, the X5's job is to load to the ball and stop Shea from driving the 45, driving the slot. That's your job. Load, get to the body, load. OKC now, because there's another guy back there, they're at the same time that the big is trying to load on Shea, there's a guard that's flaring Chet to the opposite slot. Do you know how hard that is? They're flaring a 7-footer to the opposite slot.
Right.
I mean, there's ways to guard it. I'm not going to say it right now because we may see him in the playoffs. I'm not going to give that coach there the opportunity to prepare for it, but that's very difficult when you have a guy like Shea who's going to get to the line 8 to 12 times a game, and or J-Dub, who's now turned into a fucking graze
hat. He's a star.
He's a star.
He's a star.
I told him, too. I said, boy, you out here killing. He's like, man, I had a hell of a summer. Because he came to me and said, you know, my younger brother played against Bronny last night. Because his younger brother goes to Colorado.
Cody.
Yeah, Cody. And I was like, I said, that's crazy, man. Yeah. I said, man, you, hey, keep going, bro. You're killing this shit. He was like, man, I had a hell of a summer.
He's one of those guys. He's right now not many holes in his game.
Right.
He's pretty damn good at nearly everything.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, you know, he's 22 now, I believe. Shit. 23.
That's it.
It's like in 4 or 5 years, you're like, oh, no, that guy has no holes in his game.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. I want to, before we talk more spacing, I want to touch on one last thing with the Heat. And that is, I feel like in the NBA, the phrase super team or the term super team is a little bit of a misnomer. Because you can have a big three, right? You still need 4 or 5 ancillary role players.
Absolutely.
Who star in their role and then complement the stars.
No question about it.
And it doesn't work. It doesn't work unless you have those guys. You've lived it multiple times.
I've lived it. I mean, obviously my first year in Miami, yeah, we had a big three. And everyone said it's a super team this, super team that. But we had to build our team around all minimum guys, which was still okay, but we didn't fill out the complimentary guys enough. Yeah, we had Rio, we had Udonis, you know, but we didn't have enough as far as enough complimentary guys to actually make it all work. And we still made it to the finals. And we still probably should have won the finals, but I still give credit. It is what it is. You win and you lose, and we lost. There's no, Dallas was fucking good, and they hit a stride at the right time. Dirk was unbelievable. But my second year, we was able to grab some complimentary players and role players that really just, I'm talking about superstars in their roles. And it goes back to my first year in Cleveland. Yes, we got Kevin out of a trade. We lost in the finals. We wasn't really whole to unlock everything. We wasn't whole enough to unlock everything. Then we was able to add Channing Frye, add Richard Jefferson to that second team.
Yeah.
Add those guys. And then the experience that we had from the year previously, you know, JR got better and Shump, you know, and obviously we were healthier, you know, Kyrie goes down in the finals and, you know, busted kneecap, and Kev obviously separated shoulder in year one. But you're absolutely right. The complimentary guys are ultimately the ones that will help you win the championship for sure.
Yeah,
and classified as a real super team.
Right. So I think you know, the goal of this show is to really just like talk about basketball, right?
I love it,
and it's great, and I love it.
I love it,
and I could do it all day.
Yeah, me too.
You know, we both live online. Let's be honest, we live online. We're well aware of all the discourse. I have to participate in the discourse. I want to participate so much more. I said this the other day. I was like, the discourse has a place, right? It provides a level of entertainment.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I feel like sometimes I get annoyed at a couple keywords that get involved in discourse. And we're not going to do this every episode. We're not going to do this. But I just, on this point we're making about how a team works, there's the word important. Who's the more important player for the Boston Celtics? Who's the most important player for the Boston Celtics? I also get annoyed with the word pressure, right? Those are the two words that drive me fucking crazy. Pressure in particular, because if you've like been around, you know that most guys in the NBA put an insane amount of pressure on themselves. That's why we all have fucking anxiety. Like, we all put so much pressure on ourselves. And the important word bugs me because the best player is always the most important player. It's very hard to win in the NBA if the player who has the most outsized impact isn't at his best. Yeah, for sure. And no offense, 2011 is a great example of that. Yeah,
I wasn't at my best.
You weren't at your best, and you lost.
If I played anything like I did in the Eastern Conference Finals, we win.
But you could have been at your best, and the role players could have been bad. So, like, for me, this is why I get annoyed, because I'm like, yeah. Like, when I played on the Clippers, CP and Blake, they were the most important guys on our team. But DeAndre and I had a role. Jamal had a role. Matt Barnes had a role. Luke and Bob Mute the next two years had a role. Like, we all had an important role. And guess what? We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to actually play well and actually contribute to winning.
Yeah.
And I feel like we live in this fucking 2K world where we're like putting a roster together and it's like, how can we put as many good players that don't even make sense together?
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy. It's like, what's wrong with this team? Well, it's very simple. Basketball is a very organic thing. And the players and their skills have to complement each other. And Chris Bosh is a great example of that. The sacrifice to figure out, how can my skills, and maybe I have to develop some of those, you mentioned the three-point shooting, how can I figure out how to complement?
Right.
It's going to make me better. It's going to make LeBron better. It's going to make D-Wade better. And it's going to make our team better. And that's basketball.
But that also comes from to go back to episode one, basketball IQ as well. Him having the basketball IQ and the knowledge of saying, yeah, I could still be in Toronto averaging 25 and 12, but I didn't come here for that shit. I came here to win championships. And we fucking lost in year one. What can I do to compliment my teammates? And what can I do to broaden my game out to where we don't lose in year two? Yeah. Fucking talk about growth mindset. And everyone's talking about, you know, Chris Bosh was this before that. No one ever asks Chris Bosh about how he feels. Everyone just speaks for him. No one asks him how he feels. He knew he was making a sacrifice. We all knew we was making sacrifices. But we knew what the fuck we all came together for, and that was to win championships. And that's what we did. Swing. Okay, drive the baseline. Okay, boom. I'm trapping the box. Reverse the feet. Throw it back out. Okay, now I'm back. Okay, when we drive from the slot, slot man, you come, drop from the slot. Guy drops down. He peels. Crack the big. Throw it back out. Now we back out.
Simple things like.
You want to be assistant coach
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching Mind the Game podcast. If you like it, please hit that subscribe button. Thank you.